So for the last 3 days, and this is the fourth day, we've been exploring two subjects kind of simultaneously. That is the importance and ways to improve our chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And we looked at it from different angles based on verses coming from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. And the other aspect of it is the mind. Different understandings of the nature of the mind, how to control the mind, the austerities that are recommended in order to control the mind. So I will talk a little bit more about the mind tonight. And this is from the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse number 26. And the entire sixth chapter is geared, or is actually designated, in explanations of the nature of the mind and how to control the mind. So these words are all spoken by Krishna himself. When words are spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are absolute truth. Okay, so yato yato nishchalatihi manas chanchalam astiram tatas tato niyam yait tad atmayeva vasamnayat yata yata wherever nishchalati becomes very agitated mana the mind chanchalam flickering astiram unsteady tata tata from there niyamya regulating etat this atmani in the self eva certainly vasam control, not yet, must bring under. Krishna is gradually, step by step, giving formulas. First he explains what the mind is and the benefits of controlling the mind. Now he's actually explaining how to control the mind. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind, and therefore the senses as well, is called Goswami or Swami, and one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas or servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So the nature of the mind is being described as flickering and unsteady. Sometimes it's used, the mind is liquid. Liquid means something that is always flowing or moving. Well, the mind is always moving from one thought or one desire to another, constantly moving. Trance, yoga, means to steady the mind and fix it on the Absolute Truth or on activities in relationship to the Absolute Truth. But so we're working with a situation where the mind is always in a situation where it has to be, what we say, captured and directed. So we use an example or this is a nice example, the sky is vast, the sky is unlimited, but the sky is, in the sky sometimes there are objects such as birds or planes or buildings or something within the sky, but you see that they don't touch the sky. They look like they're part of the sky, the clouds also, but they're not really touching the sky at all. It just appears that way. So using that comparison or analogy, the soul is like that unlimited sky, and the mind is like these objects that are moving in and out of the sky. So the idea is that we, consciousness, which is an expression of the soul's existence, is different from our mind. Many times we hear, often in scriptures coming from the spiritual master, and in general statements, that we are not this body, but the statement includes the mind also. So we are not our mind either. Sometimes we think, or we actually identify with ourselves by what we think of. But these are thoughts, impressions, desires, attachments that have accumulated due to our activities in the material existence, both within previous lives and in this particular life that we're in. So the mind here is described by Krishna himself as very steady, always moving from one object to another. So it says here that the yogi, or one who is interested in devotional service, one who is interested in self-realization, must bring it back every time the mind wanders. The mind will wander, that's just its nature. Krishna explains in another section, actually it's in the Bhagavatam, that as one is riding a horse, the horse has a tendency to go in whatever direction it wants to. But the rider wants the horse to go in the direction that he desires. So pulling on the reins of the horse and directing that reins in a certain direction makes the horse go. But too much pulling on the reins of the horse will cause the horse to buck, and sometimes jerk and can throw the rider off. And too little restraint on the horse by the rider will not allow the horse to be directed. So therefore Krishna explains that one should very carefully watch the mind and see where the mind is going and direct it in order to satisfy and to benefit the self. So sense control is the basic principle, and sense control actually means mind control. Sometimes the scriptures say, when you control your senses, you can control your mind. And sometimes you hear the word, when you control your mind, you can control your senses. Like that. The mind is stronger than the senses, but the sense objects are stronger than both the mind and the senses. Only when the mind is fixed in activities of devotion does the mind become stronger than the sense objects. So the mind can become stronger than the sense objects through the practice of detachment from material activities and attachment to spiritual activities. So the mind is very tricky. Krishna speaks a lot about the mind. We have a tendency to observe the external energy and interact with that energy based on the impressions and desires within the mind. There is an objective reality, but most people see reality subjectively. And what they see is not reality, it's what is called a subjective form of reality. What is inside is projected outside. So what one experiences or defines as external reality is just what is inside of one's consciousness reflected outside. The example sometimes is given that if you wear a pair of green glasses, green colored glasses, I remember when we were young growing up in the hippie days, Purple glasses, pink glasses, green glasses, you know. And then you look through it, you think, wow, everything looks green. So these were put out by the ecologists. So in such a way that, you know, the reflection of what is there is re-reflected according to the vision or the medium you're looking through. So in the same way that the reality is one, it's objective, and Krishna explains that in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says, thus when you actually see things truthfully, or thus when you know the truth, then you'll know that all living beings are in me in their mind. Prabhupada gives an example how a devotee sees the external environment using the mind and the senses. And he took his glasses off and he held them up like that. And he says, when you see my glasses, what do you think? And immediately the devotee said, oh, we think that these glasses belong to you, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, yes, that is correct. So a devotee sees everything as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is proper vision, or that is actual vision. And therefore, one sees oneself as not the enjoyer of the world, but as an opportunity to use the objects that are owned by the Supreme Lord in the service of the Supreme Lord, and that's called devotional service. That's called devotional service. So, but the mind has a tendency to want to respond to the external environment by fulfilling its own desires. The mind is, in its pure state, is in the mode of goodness, but when it gets contacted with the external energy, it takes on a particular mode accordingly. So when consciousness is different than the mind, consciousness is the awareness of the soul's existence in relationship to everything. But when the mind is an impressionable object that picks up sense data and impressions, desires from so many different areas and then projects itself, and we start to formulate a certain character or personality based on that. So as much as we are entrenched in the material energy, we are called materialists. As much as we're entrenched in the idea of seeing everything in relationship to Krishna, in other words, a more purified form of mental awareness, then we are actually Krishna conscious. So the key is to learn how to direct that mind in such a way that the mind is always moving towards the mood of devotional service. But that's not easy. 90% of the mind's existence is on the subliminal level or on the unconscious level. Generally, we work with between 10 and 15% of our mental capacity. The rest of 85 to 90% lies in the dormant state and is called the collective unconsciousness, which is all our impressions, experiences, desires that we have done from so many millions of lifetimes. Because when you transmigrate from one body to another, you lose your physical body, but you take your subtle body with you. In fact, the subtle body takes you, the soul, according to the impressions and desires and of that life, which is a collective accumulation of all of the previous lives at the time of death of that life, and then it moves you into your next body. So you get a body according to your mind, your mental state at the time of death. As Krishna says in the Gita, yam yam vapis param bhavam taktva antve kalevalam tam tam vivaiti kauntaya sadata bhava bhavitaha. Whatever you think of at the time of death, that's where you go. So therefore, the idea of devotional service is to somehow prepare one's consciousness for death. Life is a preparation for death. So when that mind is fixed on Krishna at the time of death, and Krishna says, Taktva deham purna janmani, naiti mame, then you come back to me. But the mind is really tricky. And as it's explained, even a slight deviation of the mind's activities in contact with certain sense objects can destroy a yogi's devotional progress. One has to be very careful in order to control the mind. And as we mentioned, the mind is a reflection of inside outside. Prabhupada tells a story, a little kind of analogy story, where there's an old man, he's sitting in his room in his house, and his wife is in the kitchen, she's cooking supper. So he's patiently, or he's waiting for supper. Now the man is deaf. He's very hard of hearing. So, being a little impatient because the supper's not coming, he calls to his wife, and he calls her and says, "Where's the supper?" And she said, "Just be quiet, I'm cooking, you know, read the newspaper." She calls back. And so, after some time, he calls again, and again she responds. Then finally, he's thinking, "What's wrong with my wife? She must be deaf. I'm calling and she's not answering me." He's deaf. But he's thinking, she's deaf. Atmanam manyate jagat. Which means that you think everyone thinks like you. Good luck. If you get one other person to think like you, that's a great achievement. Just one. And usually that we try to do that in married life, but a lot of times that doesn't work either. Because everyone remains individuals. So, yeah, therefore it's called, the reality of existence is actually subjective in terms of its material understanding, but objective in terms of its spiritual understanding. So by engaging in devotional service and directing the mind towards devotional service, especially hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, this is where the mind becomes focused. When we absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, the mind actually develops an attraction for that activity. Why? Because it's natural for the soul. So when the mind, through practice, starts to hear and chant the glories of the Lord, then the soul becomes awakened. And then what happens is the material mind, which is not really our real mind, it's a covering over our mind. Our real mind is the spiritual mind. But the material mind is simply a shadow reflection of our existence in the material world. That starts to dissolve, and our spiritual mind starts to be revealed. And then the spiritual mind becomes more and more revealed, then everything one sees and does is on the spiritual platform. Because that's the nature of spirit. But it takes practice to cut through that. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Chaito Darpanam Marjanam. He starts off the eight prayers known as Shikshastakam. The first thing he says out of all the eight prayers is, Chaito, mind, Darpanam, Mira Marjanam, cleansing. One should cleanse the mirror of the mind. So he used the word mirror, Darpanam, because as we say, the mind reflects inside what's outside. It reflects outside what's inside. And so, therefore one has to cleanse the dust. So that what is that dust? That is association with matter, with the desire to enjoy matter. And through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is the powerful elixir for destroying the faults of the mind and purifying the mind and bringing the mind to the spiritual platform, then the consciousness becomes transcendental. or spiritual. Gradually. But sometimes we also think, you know, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for a long time, and I'm still working with this rotten mind. What's happening? Does it work? There was one devotee, when he first joined the Hare Krishna movement back in 1966, it was Hayagriva Prabhu in New York City. He was with Prabhupada in the original Hare Krishna Center, 26 Second Avenue. And he said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, he was an English professor who had a very erudite way of speaking, very aristocratic and very proper English. Srila Prabhupada, I have been chanting Hare Krishna for 1 year. I don't have love of God. Prabhupada said, oh, 1 year. Very good. How many lifetimes you've been in this material world? Well, to speak of years. So the idea is, it's a process. And one has to be steady in doing that. And therefore Krishna says, and taking to actually make progress, one has to constantly control that mind and bring it towards the spiritual platform. Like that. And Krishna goes on. Finally, Arjuna, after listening to Krishna's words, he responds but one verse, which is quite interesting. He says, this is in verse number 35, he says, Lord Shri Krishna, no, he says, the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it, I think it's more difficult than controlling the mind. He compares to controlling the mind, not only controlling the wind, but more difficult than controlling the wind. Who can control the wind? The wind is probably the most powerful material element. When the wind becomes strong, what does it do? We see, it can, Prabhupada said there was one tornado, buses were flying in the air. The wind can go up to 300 miles an hour, even more than that. Could you imagine that wind speed? The whole cities are destroyed by the power of the wind. Wind is so powerful. Now if they get a wind blast of 125 miles an hour, you know, it's an emergency. Everyone's evacuated or going to shelters. That's 125 miles an hour. They built the cities now to withstand these hurricanes and tornadoes. Just recently in the United States, there was a hole. It's pretty much still going on in one area. There was a hole. Continuation of tornadoes hitting the United States for weeks and weeks and weeks, destroying cities, causing floods. Hundreds and thousands of people were being evacuated. This was just on the news a couple of weeks ago. Now the wind is very powerful. The wind is so powerful. So Arjuna is using this analogy to control the mind. I better try to control the wind, it's easier. And what does Krishna say in the next verse? He says, Asamsayam Mahabaho Manor Durni Gudam Chalam Abhyasena Tukonteya Vairagyena Chigrihate. He says, O mighty arm, son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and detachment. Suitable means activities of devotional service. And by detaching oneself to material sense objects. If we are engaging in sense gratification and at the same time to practice Krishna consciousness, we call that hasti snan. Hasti snan is an elephant who goes down to the bank of a river with his big trunk, his big animal. He wades in the river, takes his trunk, and throws the water all over his body. And then when he gets out, he's all clean, and then he goes to the dirt and takes the same trunk and throws dirt all over him. Right after he's done bathing. Hastisthan. So the idea is that in order to make steady progress in devotional service, devotees know what to do. But I find out we have a problem of avoiding what not to do. That's why Sanatana Goswami gives us the formula that one should be very much aware of those things to avoid in order for one's progress in Krishna consciousness to become steady or to be in one direction. So that's why Krishna says one has to be detached from the objects of sense gratification. Objects of sense gratification are constantly being thrown to us always. But then Krishna says, one who learns how to take objects of sense gratification according to one's needs and not beyond, can practice yoga successfully. Not too much, not too little. He gives that formula in all activities. So, but at the same time, one has to detach themselves from activities of sinful activities. Therefore, we very strictly follow the four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling. By following these very strictly, we avoid all sinful activities and can practice Krishna consciousness progressively. But even there are sense objects that are not sinful, but at the same time can divert one's attention away from Krishna. Therefore, in relationship to these, one has to use the principle of it's called the principle of medium. Not too much, not too little. If you take too much, then you fall into the lower modes of passion and ignorance. If you take too little, you cannot control the mind, and when the mind is not controlled, you can't be directed in devotional service. That's why finding one's balance in spiritual life according to the needs of the body and mind is the foundation for easy practice in Krishna consciousness. Then we can get the maximum results when we hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Otherwise, if we become subjected to attraction to sense objects, and then somehow try to fulfill our desires based on that attraction, then we slow down or sometimes even dilute the advancement we made in sense. That's why Prabhupada said, spiritual life is like shaving with a razor. Those of you who shave with razors know that you have to be very attentive. And a little inattention, sometimes even if you have mental inattention while you're shaving, then all of a sudden you might move in the wrong direction. And then there's some reaction to that. So, therefore, spiritual life is really is a cutting edge thing. Being very careful to keep the mind and senses in the right direction. And the foundation that gives us the strength to do that is strong sadhana. When we're hearing and chanting nicely, especially in the morning hours when we first begin our day, that's the foundation that builds the structure by which we can build our devotional service upon. It's devotional service itself, but it also leads to success in all activities. So one should very carefully take part in the early morning programs with seriously hearing and chanting. Prabhupada wrote one letter to one temple president who he wanted him to make sure the devotees got everything they needed. And he said, your job is to make sure the devotees chant 16 good rounds every day. Not just rounds, good rounds. To try to finish our japa with the idea of doing something different, or just simply making japa a chore rather than an expression of one's devotion to Krishna, an opportunity to connect with Krishna, makes the whole activity very arduous and very difficult. Therefore, one should look forward to chanting and also try to perfect that chanting by proper hearing. Hearing is the foundation for success in chanting. But the mind will interfere with the hearing process as it goes from one place to another. And therefore, one has to practice keeping that mind connected to the sound vibration. Mm-hmm. And that takes some effort. And as one makes an effort and the effort becomes successful, then the process becomes more natural and easy. But chanting is not just 2 hours a day. What are you going to do with the other 22 hours? That's the point. If you're not controlling the mind and senses during those other 22 hours, when it comes to chanting those 2 hours, it will be like trying to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Sometimes you can do that, but it's not easy. And so what the point is that keep your mind always connected to Krishna throughout the day by remembering Krishna and engaging in devotional service. Then you'll always be fixed in Krishna consciousness. As soon as we allow that mind to go somewhere else, and then we have to bring it back, and that causes us to deviate in our meditation on spiritual activities. So practice that. It's practice, as Krishna says here. Yes, Arjun, what you say is correct, but it is possible. It is possible if you practice. So Prabhupada said, devotional service is simply practice. Practice, practice, practice. You can't expect to achieve the success of your activities right away. Therefore, one has to practice, practice, practice. And as you practice, you learn the art of how to succeed in the practice, and gradually it becomes more and more joyful. Like that. But we have to practice. And never give up because of... And Krishna, in the next verse, says, one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. But his mind whose control and strives by appropriate means, that means according to the instructions of the spiritual master, is assured of success. He said, that is my opinion. Krishna gives his opinion. So these are some points to work with, because we can't really hear enough about the mind, because the mind is the thing. There's no reality outside of the mind, because the mind projects reality accordingly. So therefore, there's a statement, it says, we have found the enemy, and it is us. But we also can find a friend, and it's us. So make the mind a friend and not your enemy. By bringing the mind under control and engaging in devotional service. And again, we have a tendency to focus the mind on spiritual activities, but when it comes to a day-to-day interaction, we sometimes allow that mind to go anywhere and everywhere, so we have to be really careful in controlling the mind. Any questions? Comments? Yes, Mukunda.
I'm sorry, I have a non-question.
You have a what?
A non?
I have a non-question.
Non-question.
I just wanted to... I was asked by some devotees to just say that today is the disappearance day of Bhakti Tirtha Swami.
Oh, yeah. Disappearance day.
Yes.
According to the moon calendar.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, in Zagreb, on Friday night, we're going to be doing a program in honor of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. We do it every year. So that's on the 28th. His actual departure day was June 27th, 2005, so it's 14 years. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Maharaj was really, he was, Bhakti Tirtha Swami was a psycho spiritualist. He did a lot of work with mental, he put two books together in the Spiritual Warrior series, two books, both about 250 pages, all about the mind. And so he did a lot of experiments and investigations and talks about what is the mind, how to deal with the mind, how to control the mind. So in that Spiritual Warrior series, there were how many books? Six, and book four and five are both on the mind. Yeah. So you can see how important it is to work with that. Anything, any other comments or questions? Okay. You're sure? Okay. Gopal, Sundar Gopal. We should all meditate on Sundar Gopal, because he's a very beautiful personality.
Do you have any practical advice when mind is already under the influence of some lower gunas, for example, anger or...
When you're already captivated by Maya,
yeah.
How to get out?
Yeah.
Krishna, help. Yeah, it depends. You know, sometimes we can't really experience or not experience, can't really understand how much we are. But then again, when it can become so strong, then we realize I'm in trouble. I think when you're really in trouble is when you start looking towards the material energy for enjoyment. Then you're in trouble. And sometimes we find ourselves in difficult situations, we can always think of Krishna, and we get protected by Krishna. But I think our most dangerous situation is when we look or have a desire to enjoy the external energy, and that desire becomes so strong that we can't check it. We can't check it. And some people, you know, they have so many programs for Alcoholics Anonymous, and Overeaters Anonymous, Sex Anonymous, people who are addicted to sex life. There's one group in America called Shoppers Anonymous, people who are addicted to shopping. Really, it's like a fetish, it's like an addiction. Especially ladies, they go during their lunch hour when they're working as secretaries, and they just take their credit card and run up hundreds of dollars worth of stuff. They're just addicted to buying things. People get addicted to buying things. This is due to the proliferation of materialistic life, that people just want more and more material things, and they have to have it. And so they actually become sick. And then they find out they ruined their whole life. They can't even pay for it. They go bankrupt. You know, the bank takes control of their assets because they can't pay. And sometimes they find themselves in really difficult situations. So yeah, the mind can really develop an attachment to something in such a way that it becomes impossible to break. And the common thing we know is that people know that cigarette smoking is dangerous and can cause death. They know it, they hear about it, they read about it, but still they keep smoking. Because they can't give it up. The mind tells them they need it. The mind becomes so powerful. So when you're in those situations, then you really need a lot of mercy, a lot of help. So either you take shelter of someone to help you, which is the best thing, and if you're all alone, then just Krishna save me. Seriously calling out for Krishna, and Krishna will help you if you seriously call out. But that's the most dangerous thing. You know, Prabhupada said, Maya is not our problem. Prabhupada said, the demons, because there's demons in the world, Maya has to do our job. But Maya's our friend. Why? Because she's always working in such a way as to bring us closer to Krishna. But the demons are there, and therefore they're servants of Maya personified, and therefore they're causing so much problems in the world. And so therefore the devotees have difficulties because of the demons. That's really the problem. Otherwise for devotees, the Maya is not so bad. The demons, when I say the demons, they're always proliferating and propagating ways to enjoy sense gratification more and more. And because they have control of the media and various forms of entertainment, they propagate this as material happiness, like that. So when you find yourself in trouble, just call out to Krishna. But generally, we're always in trouble. And therefore, as Prabhupada said, this place is dangerous. Therefore, one should always remember Krishna. One should always remember Krishna. And by having strong sadhana, it becomes easier and easier to remember Krishna throughout the day. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, by chanting every day, one will chant always. What he means, chant your 16 rounds every day, and then gradually, after so many years, you'll develop attraction for that, and then you can increase more and more. Great souls are chanting 24 hours a day. Even when they're resting, their consciousness is absorbed in glorifying the Lord in an internal way. It's being done internally. And that's pure consciousness. These are the great souls. But we can practice that. Always remembering Krishna. One of the most dangerous time for the mind is early in the morning and late at night. At that time, the mind is most difficult to control. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to say, in the morning, beat your mind with shoes, and in the evening, beat your mind with a broomstick. Broomstick. So in other words, the mind really needs extra amount of control and attention during those two times, because that's when the mind is most restless. Like that. Any other comments or questions? Yes, Tirtha Kirti. Yeah, that's why you had. That's how you beat your mind. Just beat it with the holy name. If you don't do that, you're going to find yourself in a lot of trouble. That's why Prabhupada highly recommends that we chant our rounds early. Early rounds are the best time to chant, because you set the foundation for the rest of the day's activities, and it also protects you against becoming victimized by, you know, material sense gratification. Do you want to know what I recommend? Chant 16 rounds before you do anything. So you might say, well, how do I do that? Just get up early. And chant. I mean, don't be tired, but get up early and chant. If you chant 16 rounds every day before you do anything, your Krishna consciousness will really be nice. And then you can focus on service throughout the day. You can also remember Krishna throughout the day. Late rounds really make the day difficult. If you're living in a temple, of course you go to Mangal Arati. So Mangal Arati here is good, 5 o'clock, right? So you get up at 2:30. And you by 3:15 you're ready to go. So from 3:15 to 5 you can chant. You can chant at least 12 rounds or maybe more. And then after Mangal Arati, or right after Tulsi Puja, and you finish 4 rounds, by 7 o'clock you have all your rounds done. So those who are living in the temple should get all their rounds done before the second half of the program. And if you do that, I guarantee you, you'll see a significant change in your consciousness. You'll feel more happy in Krishna consciousness, like that. But if we get up late and we start doing things and then the holy name is somewhere on the list, then it becomes difficult. The day is divided into 3 modes. From 2 o'clock to 10 is the mode of goodness. From 10 to 6 is the mode of passion. From 6 to 2 in the a.m. is the mode of ignorance. So the modes have a certain influence during a certain time. So chanting during the mode of goodness is the best time. So that's the secret to Krishna consciousness. Get up early. Don't stay up late. There's nothing to do in the evening unless you're going to out. If you're going out preaching, that's a whole different thing. If you're going out preaching, then you get protection by Krishna because you're preaching. But if you're not preaching, take rest by 9:30. It's nice. These are practical things, but it's important to understand how to supplement our spiritual activities with the right practical activities so we get the maximum benefit from that. Early rounds. Like I had a vow for years, I would never take breakfast until I chanted 12 rounds. Like that. Now I don't do that anymore. I chant 16 rounds before breakfast. I do it every day, and you can't change me. So yeah, 16 rounds is early is the best time. And try to work on quality too, not just getting your rounds done. Prabhupada was really strict. Of course, Prabhupada didn't sleep like we slept. Prabhupada went to bed at 10:30. He said, I used to go to bed between 10:30 and 11 every night. I get up between 12:30 and 1. So he slept about 2 hours. And then he would do his translations, Bhaktivedanta purports on Srimad Bhagavatam. And then after a couple hours, then he would chant. And then after chanting for a while, he would take a morning walk with his devotees and wind up at the temple. He'd begin his morning walk at 6 a.m. From 6 to 7, he'd wind up at the temple at 7, greet the deities at 7, and then sit on the Vyasasana, accept Guru Puja and give class. That was his schedule, that part of the day, every day, no matter where he was. Prabhupada never broke his schedule. He was really strict. And so he was teaching us, You have to, and especially the early morning hours are really precious. This is the time for hearing and chanting nicely. Okay. So I don't want to stay up too late. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai.